to the political cesspool known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the second hour of tonight's live broadcast of the Political Cesspool radio program. First show of the year. It's Saturday night, January 1st, 2011. Thank you for being with us this evening. I'm James Edwards, here from AM 1380 WLRM Radio in Memphis, Tennessee, our flagship station, but by no means our only affiliate, thanks to the Liberty News Radio Network and their AM-FM affiliate stations across the country. And, of course, we're simulcasting online as well all around the world. People are tuned in tonight at thepoliticalcesspool.org and libertynewsradio.com. And not only are they tuned in, they are logged in and participating in the Council of Conservative Citizens online chat, the Political Cesspool virtual fan party that we are now hosting each week in cooperation with the Council of Conservative Citizens. To join that and be a part of the show, interact with us and the featured guests, just log on to the chat room at cofcc.org. Cofcc.org could not find a finer organization. I am certainly proud to be a part of it and to serve humbly as a member on its board of directors, as is the man that is with me right now, my co-host and fellow brother-in-arms, Mr. Bill Rowland, sitting in the seat just minutes ago occupied by Keith Alexander. Bill, how are you tonight?
James, I couldn't be better. Getting back from the holidays and, of course, enjoying New Year's Day and Christmas, outstanding with the family. There's just no better time of year.
No, it isn't. It's very special. You know, the dawn of a new year, as we've written, comes with the promise and of hope, and we're excited about the pleasant surprises and accomplishments that are forthcoming this year and lay littered down the path for us to pick up and collect, and certainly we're going to be galloping toward those with a full head of steam. But, Bill, you know, one thing we wanted to do at the very top of the show tonight, and do it very quickly because, of course, everything that we're about to talk about has been talked about before, but I think we just wanted to quickly look back on some of our proudest moments of 2010. 2010 was a very big year for the Political Cesspool radio program. In fact, there's never been a year that we attracted more headlines and news coverage than we did last year. We're hoping that this year, and are expecting that this year, will be even bigger, as each year seems to have eclipsed the previous. But Bill, you were a big part of many of our biggest accomplishments last year, and so we're going to quickly go down the list of these, get a couple of comments from you on each, and then we will move forward and talk about what we can predict, not only for this show, but for the country in general, and the world in general, in the year to come. Number 10 on the top 10 of last year, Bill, our Confederate History Month series. We've been doing it every year since our inception back in 2004. I don't think there's another radio program out there that's doing anything close to what we do to honor the boys in gray.
No, and we've got 4 years now, the sesquicentennial of the war between the states, the war of northern aggression, however you want to term it. This is the sesquicentennial, the next 4 years. And so we'll be looking forward to, I think, commemorations of particularly the big battles and big events of the war. And I know that around the South there are big events planned. And I invite those of you out there who live in the South or any part of the country to recognize this event, this particular time of year, because it is 150th anniversary.
And we have some things that we're planning here for the Political Cesspool, both on the ground and on the air, to commemorate this momentous occasion, the 150th anniversary of our fight, our battle for independence once again. But that'll be something that we'll unveil as the year progresses. Number 9, Bill, on our top 10 list of the year that was. We have done a lot of interviews over the years with newspapers. In fact, Bill, one of my most vivid memories of any newspaper interview I've given took place at a hotel lobby here in Memphis with you. It was an interview that we did back in 2008 with the New York Times. A journalist for the New York Times flew from New York to Memphis just to have the opportunity to meet with us in person. Well, this year, the record for distance travel just to have the opportunity to break bread with us for an interview was eclipsed by a journalist from France who flew all the way to Paris to Memphis, from Paris to Memphis, just to interview us about our work. Now, Eddie the Bombardier Miller fielded that interview. All of us were out of town. I know me, you, and Keith were all out of town that weekend. And so was Winston, as a matter of fact. Eddie did the interview, did a bang-up job. But, Bill, talk about the interviews we've given over the year and the fact that someone from Paris would fly to Memphis just to interview us for a very big French newspaper.
Of course, that means that the show is taking on an international scope and is recognized even in a country like France, which, of course, if they're listening to us, you have to be able to speak English to understand the show because we don't translate. But I think it's an indication that the ripple effect of the show is reaching audiences around the world and, of course, is having an effect around the world. And I think that whatever small measure that we have added to nationalistic feelings around the world, you know, I'd like to think that we have at least raised a few eyebrows, caused people to do a hooray or to give us a thumbs up. And, you know, the thing is, if we do nothing else, we can raise the morale in countries around the world who are seeking, again, turning to nationalism and, again, looking to their own roots for solutions to their national problems instead of becoming part of the globalist empire and the globalist team. They're beginning to countries in Europe are beginning to reject that, and that's a good sign. And I think we have played a small role in that. I think we have made our points, and someplace around the world, somebody is listening to us, and they're taking those points seriously.
Because we have decided to swim against the tide, we've made a name for ourselves, and certainly been able to position ourselves head and shoulders above a lot of the lame duck opposition. And so that trend will surely continue as we continue to build more and more of headline news credentials each year. Bill, number 8 on the top 10 list, and we'll make this one quick, and then we'll hammer out the rest of them at the top of the next segment, then get into predictions. Just a few weeks ago, as you know, we've been talking about it all night. We hosted that virtual fan party that allowed our listeners to communicate with us in an online chat room while the show was being broadcast live. This is, of course, Kyle Rogers' brainstorm and something that we're doing in cooperation with the Council of Conservative Citizens. It's been such a success, Bill, and so much fun that we're now planning to do it each week for the indefinite future. The online chat party is number 8 in our top 10 moments of 2010.
Well, really what I want to say about that is thumbs up to Kyle Rogers for setting that up, and it's a great idea, and it's going great. And, of course, I would like to say hello to all of the people in the chat room tonight and welcome them to the show and hope everybody's having some fun.
It's a standing room only crowd there at CFCC.org. Ladies and gentlemen, if you've not yet joined us there, we encourage you to do so right now. We're about to take a commercial break. When we come back after the words from our sponsors, Bill Rowland and I will quickly go through the top 7 the top 7 events of 2010 here for us in the political cesspool, and then we're going to move on to even more important topics of conversation. We're going to be talking about predictions for the year to come, and it's just getting started tonight on January 1st. We're happy to be here with you, honored to serve as your voice. James Edwards and Bill Rowland back for more right after this.
Don't go away. There's more Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages.
When the truth is found to be...
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's dime, toll-free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
We're going to very quickly wrap up our look back on the year that was, the top 10 moments in the political cesspool's 2010. Number 8 on the list, we were down to number 8. And that was, of course, the debut of our online chat parties. We're taking part in one right now. And I want to quickly, and it's very crowded. It's standing room only there in the chat room, Bill. And I'm not going to be able to get to everyone, but I just want to say hello to a few of the people that are in there in the chat tonight. We've got Krieg. We've got Jeffrey Rogers. Jimmy X, another radio star. Clint Fitzgerald. Stephen Walker. Let's see. Jeffrey Addington. Courtney from Alabama. Jeff Jones. course, our admins, Sean and Kyle and many, many others that I say, Clint Fitzgerald. Listen, it's a some of the best people you'll ever find. They're in our chat room right now at CFCC.org taking place in the Political Cesspool Virtual Fan Party, and we're so glad to have them. Now, back to the list, Bill. I'm going to compact this because we are getting short on time, beginning to get pressed for time. We got under the skin, as we always do, of some of the more notorious leftists out there. So I'm going to combine number 6 and number 7. We were able to perturb, if we can use that word, Keith Olbermann and Rachel Maddow on MSNBC, and Eli Roth, the B-list movie actor. I said, you know, what's better than annoying a couple of B-list television personalities when you can annoy B-list movie actors as well? So Keith Olbermann, Rachel Maddow, and Eli Roth all took issue with our work this year, Bill, and we couldn't be happier about that.
Oh, and what do they have in common, I wonder? Besides their media presence, which is known only to the handful of drooling, moronic, and depraved leftists out there who still listen to them, but you know, besides that, you know, we know who's behind the who's behind the game. So let's just leave it at that and move on to the next.
The next one is, in fact, number 5. And Bill, I'll let you. I'll just read it and let you go from there because it really covers a lot. Number 5 on our list of top 10 most memorable moments last year, our live remote broadcast from the Council of Conservative Citizens National Conference last June in Nashville. Not only did we have the all-star lineup of guests that we always do at these live confabs, we also made national news. And why was that?
That was because of Tim Adams, who was part of the Election Commission in the state of Hawaii during the presidential elections, who informed us as an authority, as someone who was there, as someone who was responsible for certifying people to vote. He revealed on our show exclusively that President Obama was not born in the state of Hawaii.
That's what he said, and he had, as you mentioned, Bill, the authority to say it because he was a senior elections clerk in Honolulu during the 2008 elections. It became big news, covered by WorldNet Daily. I believe Fox picked it up. Political Cesspool not just commentating on the news, but making the news as well. And
now even Chris Matthews is saying, show us your papers, President Obama, show us your papers.
Hey, that's something else. When a rock-ribbed liberal like Chris Matthews is even saying, and why shouldn't he? I mean, how hard could it be unless there is something to hide? And so anyway, we were able to put our stamp on the whole birth certificate controversy with Tim Adams' interview from the CFCC conference. That's number 5 on our list. Number 4, back-to-back these things happened, Bill. The CFCC conference was in June. This next fiasco, or this next media fiasco, happened in July, and we were right at the center of this one, the Paul Bebue incident. Do you remember that one?
I do. Of course.
What happened?
I wasn't really part of that as much as you Eddie the Bombardier, but of course, this was a case where a man was invited on our show. He knew all about the show. He had done the background check on us and approved of our message. But unfortunately, he came on the show, and the liberal press and the liberal media began wagging fingers at him and giving him ugly looks. And so, of course, he runs and hides and says, I didn't know anything about this show, and I didn't know they were racist, blah, blah, blah. But, of course, he knew exactly who we were. And I think the most important thing about that particular show is it rocked the McCain boat. And had McCain's opponent been anything other than a tool and a moron, he probably would be the senator of Arizona today.
Yeah, you know, Bill, you're making mention of the fact that we were one of the biggest news stories because of this interview that we conducted with this sheriff there in Pinal County, Arizona. The political cesspool became the biggest political news story in Arizona for about a month, and we were thrust into the bitter senatorial campaign between J.D. Hayworth and John McCain. So that's number 4 on the list. Number 3, and Bill, you were certainly a part of this, Nick Griffin's annual interview. History was made when Nick Griffin came back onto our show this year. So many people were tuned in online that it temporarily overloaded exploded Liberty News Radio's ability to administer our live internet feed, which was something that has never happened before. Nick Griffin, always a star when he appears on our show, but never more so than this year. Number three on the list.
Nick Griffin, you know, all we can say is that we are Radio Free Britain. You have to tune into the political cesspool radio show in the United States to hear the unvarnished, the untwisted Nick Griffin on our show. You can't hear it in Britain. In Britain, of course, they're going to put up all kinds of flack and all kinds of fireworks to obscure, Mr. Griffin's message. But on the political cesspool, the people in Britain got to hear him and hear what he had to say without the interference and without the static from BBC or these other ultra-leftist outlets in Britain who are just simply propaganda machines for Marxist-Leninism and cultural Marxism.
It was a big interview. We've had Nick on the show three times, including twice in the past 2 years, and we look forward to having him back on for his annual interview this year, a little later on in 2011, something to look forward to. Now, granted, I will come clean here. I was the one who solely compiled our list of top 10 moments of the year, and I think that it'd be hard to argue that any of these would not qualify as top 10 moments. Maybe this one was placed a little bit too highly at number two. Maybe not. But as we all know, I was thrilled to have the opportunity to release my first book this year and to have it be met with such overwhelming critical acclaim. Bill, we don't have to talk about that, but me becoming a newly minted author made number two on the list. Now, number one, and I don't think there's any controversy about this. We had a guest on twice this year, but it was the second interview that turned the world upside down. He came on, he told the truth as he saw it, and as a result, the political cesspool received coverage from 105 different newspapers around the world, several Hollywood tabloids. We were spoofed on the Jimmy Kimmel Live show, and I was invited to appear on Entertainment Tonight to talk about what happened when Mel Gibson's dad, Hutton Gibson, came on the political cesspool and was interviewed by me and Bill Rowland. That is our number one moment of 2010. And, Bill, I know you remember it fondly.
I do. As a matter of fact, I was as surprised by Mr. Gibson's answers, I think, as the audience was. I did not know that he was really going to take a 1-2 punch at the Vatican like that. And of course, as you say, this is a man who knows quite a bit about the Vatican and the workings of the Second Vatican and the popes and so forth. He's made it a life study, and certainly I don't think he could be dismissed as somebody who was just ranting, because he has done a great deal of work and research on the Vatican and has studied it intensively. And, of course, what was played on the Jimmy Kimmel show and what was played in the various left-wing media mouthpieces and bullhorn was only that small clip of him saying that he thought the Pope was homosexual. But you have to listen to the entire interview to really understand the context and to get the picture of what's really going on in the Vatican. And
Bill, we got to take a break, buddy. We'll come back and wrap it up and get to predictions for the year that comes. Those were the top 10 moments of last year, and we're going to try to top it this year. We're going to let Bill talk about that right after this.
To get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. Big
girls don't cry. All right, welcome back. That last segment kind of got cut short due to the commercial break, but we were just wrapping up our top 10 moments here in the political cesspool from 2010. And Bill, you know, we were talking about all the news that we made just that year alone. That doesn't even take into account all the news we've made in the years previous or prior to that. Any one of those top 10, I think any normal show would be able to hang their hat on. And certainly it's become par for the course for us here in the political cesspool. And I think we're going to have another big year of similar stories to tell 12 months from now.
I think so, James. Of course, we're making some real improvements on the show, I think, for this year. We talked about it earlier, and talking about getting new guests and new popular people back on and sort of ramping up our guest list as well. So we're looking forward to that. And I think it's a good time, the New Year's, to make some predictions about the forthcoming year politically and about what's going on in this country as well.
Well, Bill, you know, you're always so good at this, and this is a reason that I had to have you on the show during the second hour, because I knew we were going to be looking back at some of the things we were able, fortunate to accomplish in 2010, and of course you were a big part of that. And I can remember, I don't know if it was 2007, 2008, after, you know, we're in our seventh year on the air now, it all kind of runs in together at this point, but I can remember doing a show with you. We were sitting in the studio, and I was listening. It was a show just like this. We were making some predictions. I don't know if it was about Obama or what it was, but you made two or three predictions that no one could have foreseen, even if they had crystal ball in hand. And I'll tell you the truth, every one of them came true. Do you remember those predictions?
I remember the one particularly about Obama, the possibility of him getting elected clearly when Hillary was in the lead. Or was supposed to be taking the Democratic nominee, but particularly I remember making the prediction about the increased hostility and violence towards whites once Obama was president, and also election fraud. But you know, for this year, I think things are really going to hit the boiling point in a lot of areas, and particularly the economy. Right now, I don't think I'm really going overboard when I say that the economy is as fragile as a snowflake. And certainly there's going to be an attempt by the Fed and by Wall Street to pump up the stock market to 1,200 or so in order to keep the price of gold down. And this is going to lead to a sudden drop in the stock market, more uncertainty there, probably around February or March. Many of the stocks, many companies are cash rich, but that cash is going to be diminishing over this year. And so, there's all of this bright, shining hope about the new figures on unemployment. Those are false figures. Many people who are not applying for unemployment have stopped looking for jobs, and their unemployment's run out. And so, we're talking about real high unemployment figures in the year to come. And will lead to social problems as well. $5 a gallon gas, I think that's an exaggeration, but gas will be higher. All breads will be higher. And this is going to create problems on the lower social levels among our illegal alien population. They're not going back to Mexico to feed themselves. They're going to be looking for handouts here. And, of course, the black population, increased black militancy, increased black radicalism, give me more. Where's my check attitude? And white people, I think, are going to be fed up with it and say, we don't have the money to put out on these ridiculous programs anymore. And there'll be increased consciousness on the part of whites.
Bill, you bring up something, segue into it perfectly, something that I wanted to ask you about. And like I said, ladies and gentlemen, you need to take pen and paper in hand and mark down some of the things that Bill is prognosticating right now, because he has had a pretty uncanny knack on this radio program over the years for calling things that hit. But Bill, now more than ever, I'm getting emails and letters. Of course, the political cesspool is just inundated now, and we're so fortunate. We don't take any of this for granted. I want you to know this, ladies and gentlemen. We are so thankful for the listening audience and the fans that we have, and we're very fortunate to be able to be flooded, truly, with so many letters and emails each day. And Bill, being the recipient of so much correspondence, I've been able to kind of compare and contrast it over the years. And I am seeing a lot more hope this year or in recent months than I have ever before during my tenure as host of this radio program. People really seem to think that white racial consciousness is going to become in vogue again. Now, I've always said that, but I've always said that the possibility existed for that to occur, but it seems more and more people are encouraged to the point that they think we really might be on the cusp of making some great political strides. What do you can you elaborate more on that?
There's no hope in either the Republican or Democratic parties, but what is going to happen, I think, in both parties is that there's going to be a fracture along certain lines politically, and that the Republican Party is going to be fractured between moderate Republicans, neocons, and ultra-conservatives. I think that the neocons are going to make every effort possible to stamp out what will be a real conservative surge among Republicans, and that people will begin to see the Republican Party as an empty suit. It's a pointless exercise in hope, putting hope in false promises. And the old fat, worthless Republicans like Newt Gingrich are going to be getting more airtime. Mike Huckabee, the usual gang of big puffy marshmallows who have loud mouths but no backbone. So that's who you're going to see. That's who the media is going to push. The really tough guys, the guys who are really fighting for white Americans, are going to be marginalized in the Republican Party. This is a trend that's not going to be reversed. I hope this will infuse new anger and new energy into the Tea Party movement, a fracture there as well over race, of course, that many people are going to be fed up with this attempt to multiculturalize the Tea Party movement. They're going to see where the strength is. On the other hand, many of the Tea Party leaders are going to be coming straight out of the neocon stable and making an attempt to take over the Tea Parties, and it's going to lead to some I think pretty nasty confrontation. On the Democratic side, Hillary is coming up again. Her star will begin to rise, if it's just a false light. Nevertheless, I think she sees her opportunity to make a headway against Obama in 2012. And as far as Obama goes, I think it's the most important thing. He is going to become more the bunker mentality is really going to take over at the Obama White House, and he's going to see his only source of strength as the radicalized black power movement, that the black power generators are going to be out there screaming and yelling for more and more power, more and more influence, more and more political clout, and he's going to have to turn to them as his base, and it's going to be, I think it's really going to get ugly. I think he is already paranoid. I think he's already bitter. And that's going to begin to show. It's going to begin to come to the surface because he knows he does not have the Congress anymore, and the Senate is more and more reluctant to take action, and so his programs are going to fall apart, including nationalized health care. So you're going to see a more and more black-leaning, more and more militant Obama talking about more and more social welfare and so forth, but at the same time, falling in line with the neocons on the big problems of the Middle East, and of course he's going to fall on the side of Israel, at least for the first few months of 2011.
I think that the Republicans were fortunate going forward that they didn't take full control of Congress, that they only won one body and not the other. So now, all of their voters can still blame the failures of America on the Democrats, when in actuality we know that they're both just two wings of the same buzzard when you're talking about the Republican and the Democrats. But I want to double back something to you said, something that you said, Bill, about the Tea Parties, because I'm interested. You know, we've had a love-hate relationship with the Tea Parties since their inception here. We've been covering them for over a year and a half, it seems, on this program now. I think that the people who make up the Tea Parties have good conservative instincts, but the people that lead them are certainly leading them astray. Certainly people like Sarah Palin and some of the local leaders that have ascended into positions of power. And we know all of the pandering and so on and so forth. But, I mean, does the Tea Party, it was easy for them, relatively easy. I mean, it's never easy when you have millions of people coming together in a grassroots phenomenon. That was unprecedented, what they were able to do, coming together in those numbers. But they had a cause, and that was to win elections. Now that it's 2 years before the next elections, what are they going to do? How are they going to apply themselves? Think about that. We got to take a break. We're going to come back to that question after these words from our sponsors. What will the Tea Party's mission be now that elections are not around the corner? And can they continue to move forward, or will they dissipate, thinking that victory has been won since they put a few more Republicans in Washington? We'll get Bill Rowland's reply right after this.
We'll be back right after these messages.
We'll return. We'll return. We'll return, we'll return.
jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, welcome back. The first show of the year, charging forwards, full steam ahead. We're over halfway through tonight's live broadcast of the Political Cesspool. So glad to have everyone with us around the world, across America, and in our chat room, the Political Cesspool virtual online chat, our fan party at cfcc.org. It's being hosted, of course, by the Council of Conservative Citizens, the Political Cesspool radio program, and the CFCC, always working in cooperation with one another. And if you're not in our chat room yet, remember, we still have an hour forthcoming tonight, still plenty of time to be part of tonight's show by logging on and interacting with us as we host this show live. Join us now, cfcc.org. Bill Rowland, my co-host and good friend, with me for this hour. And earlier this hour, we were talking about the top 10 moments of the political cesspool's 2010. Now we're taking a look at the year that lies ahead politically and for this show. And Bill, before the break, I said I was asking you your prediction on the future of the Tea Parties. Will they dissipate now that they have sent a few more Republicans to Washington, or will they be able to see that their greatest achievements are still need to be met?
The Tea Parties, I think, are going to become more sectarian, more segmented. The concentration at the local level will be more intense. The one thing, of course, that threatens the Tea Parties more than anything else is a top-down hierarchy that could be established by big money and the big fat Republicans like Newt Gingrich and Dick Armey and some of the other high-profile Republicans. I think that they're attempting to establish a hierarchy in the Tea Party from the top down. I think that's going to fail, but certainly there are going to be some regional and local differences in these Tea Party movements, and that's a healthy thing. But how effective they will be in 2012 remains to be seen. But I don't think that there's going to be the same effect. I think that there is going to be another sort of pessimism about the political future of this country, and the Tea Parties, unless they are really focused on key issues, one of them being race and one of them being nationalism, those two things. Then they're just going to be rehashing old problems. They're going to be talking about things that have been ongoing now for 3 or 4 years, and that is not going to be a basis for activism anymore. They have to talk about the real issues in this country. They have to open their eyes and, grit their teeth and attack the real issues. Here's another thing. I really think that there's a sound or really solid indication of increased violence in this country, not only against whites, but against policemen, against legal authority. And I think that's going to grow, and it's going to be more and more, not only from blacks, who have been the main participants in this, attacks on whites and attacks on cops, but also the Hispanics now are going to be radicalized by the failure of the DREAM Act and by the failure of some of these attempts to force amnesty down the throats of the American people. And they're going to take a more militant stand, and they're going to become more militant in the Southwest and in California. And I think it could reach the crisis point on some level. So, we'll keep our eyes open for that. I don't think that's any real surprise. I just see that coming as a backlash from the failure of the DREAM Act. So, these are things that we're going to have to be aware of, that this is a racial problem. And, of course, the media will try to couch it in terms of the economy or the all kinds of things, but it's a race problem. And, you already see the media now, once again, trying to, dispossess and dilute and disintegrate white people with some of the ads we saw over Christmas of open and race mixing and, of course, black men grabbing white women and dashing and dancing through the snow. And I was in the mall, James, and there were ads, posters and displays everywhere that were indications of, that the media and big business are determined to smash the white race through race mixing. And you're going to see more and more shows come out that are openly hostile to the racial existence of white people. And I think white, there's going to be a backlash for that. I think white people realize now that we're the target of elimination. We're the target of genocide, culturally, physically, biologically, that's where it's headed. And you're going to see more of that in the coming year, and I think the backlash is going to be quite strong.
Ladies and gentlemen, I want to remind you that we have some very interesting blog entries posted to our official website, which is, of course, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Not only did we put up an entry a few days ago that allowed you to vote for the guests that you would most like to hear from as we kick things off this January, we also had a couple of other interactive blog entries, one of which being our predictions thread. And Bill Rowland is making his predictions tonight. I've let it be known about the accuracy of his track record here. So we always make sure that Bill's on the first show of each year as we gaze into his crystal ball with him. But you, our listening audience, the members of our listening audience, our fans, have put forth a few dozen of your predictions for 2011 as well. We don't have the time left this segment to read through them, but we encourage you to read along with us as you listen to the show tonight by going to thepoliticalcesspool.org. There, near the top of the blog roll, you'll find our predictions article, and read what your peers in our listening audience are thinking will be forthcoming this year too. Bill, one more question for you. What do you see for the political cesspool in 2011? I know we touched on it very briefly as we were recapping our 2010, but we got 12 months looking us square in the eye. Where are we a year from now?
Bigger audience. I think with the guests we're having on, they're going to bring more people to the show, and people are going to be tuning in on a regular basis. We've talked about that, and I hope we'll be breaking more stories. But, James, I got two predictions that I want to make before I go off the air real quick.
One, all right, hit them.
One is that, of course, this is the Civil War sesquicentennial. I see major disruptions from the NAACP and other black radical groups and left-wing groups in the South trying to disrupt or otherwise stop commemorations of Civil War history in the South and the role the South played in that war, the suffering we went through. I think they're going to make a concerted effort to try and disrupt that as much as possible. And again, I think Southerners are going to be angry about it. But my main prediction tonight is that I believe that the SPLC, the Southern Poverty and Law Center, our old nemesis, more and more people in the media, more and more journalists are beginning to look under the skirts of the SPLC. They don't like what they smell. They don't like what they see. They're going to be more and more exposés. Donations, contributions to the SPLC are down quite a bit this year, year over year, and over the past years. And I think that the SPLC is going to be striking out more and more desperately, trying to find more and more hate, because they are hate merchants. That's how they make their money. They're hate merchants. And I think I wouldn't be surprised, and here's my long long cast prediction, is to see Mark Potok being removed from his place as spokesman for the SPLC, because he's not marketable. He's a geek. He is a freaky-looking little a gnome, and I think that the SPLC is going to say, "Hey, we got to have somebody with a little more telegenic than Mark Potok." And I see him being removed from his post as spokesman for the SPLC, and they'll have somebody with a prettier face or someone who comes off with more class or at least more fundraising ability than Mark Potok. But I think there's going to be some real deep reporting on the SPLC, particularly with regards to their funds, how they spend them, how they collect them, and what they're actually doing in Montgomery. And I look forward to that.
Well, I certainly look forward to that prediction being fulfilled. I tell you know, when you look at the faces of the SPLC and you find Mark Potok and Heidi Beirich, they certainly didn't invest in any aesthetic, that's for sure. But listen, and I tell you, Bill, you're exactly right. I'm glad you brought that up. They totally went overboard with labeling every Christian in America as a member of a hate group, which is essentially what they did just last month. And listen, if that doesn't show the true nature of their agenda, I don't know what will. Bill, we got 30 seconds left. I got one other prediction that you've made, one prediction that I'm actually still waiting to happen. You said we will live. You didn't say what happened at a certain time. We have 30 seconds. You said we will live to see the day when there is no operating newspaper in America anymore. The newspapers are dying, and that's certainly something we would like to see hastened.
Well, it's coming as the economy gets worse, and it's going to get worse. That's going to only put more pressure on these dinosaur newspapers, these paper tigers, to be put out of business. And I look forward to that day, too. They've done more damage to white people in this country than any other single source, and I look forward to the day when these journalists who are so high and mighty and have done everything they can to bring down the white race are standing in line trying to get jobs themselves and having to look eye to eye into the people that they have sought to destroy and dispossess. And let's see how what they think of their loss of white privilege when they have to stand in a line, look in an unemployment line, and perhaps the only job they're able to get is waiting tables.
Bill Rowland, I'm so fortunate to have the opportunity to serve with you here on the radio program, and I'll see you again soon, my friend. Thanks for coming in tonight.
Happy New Year to everybody.
That's Bill Rowland. I'll be back with the third hour right after this.
I know I want.